Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. Today we're going to continue our conversation about substance abuse, but we're going to focus specifically on the, quote, opioid crisis.
Opioid from the opium.
Right.
Poppy.
Yes. And so we're going to talk about it because it has been in the news a lot lately.
Right.
Primarily because, well, we have... Have we declared war against...
Of course. No.
Not declared war. We just declared that there's an opioid crisis.
Yes.
Yes. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And there's some great links in the show notes to a couple of articles. One from CNN that sort of gives us the facts about the opioid crisis. And another one that says, you know, it's not just Big Pharma that's to blame.
Right. The first article is good because very succinct, lots of really good, easy to understand data. Mm-hmm. You don't have to wade through statistical analyses. It's right up front. Good percentages, good numbers, alarming numbers.
Yes. Okay.
But the second article explains why we have... I think it does an excellent job of explaining why we have an opioid crisis. It's written by a physician.
Right.
And he explains why we're having this opioid crisis, which I think is the other useful part of this. Right. So we're going to combine these two, into one.
Okay. So very quickly, let's talk very briefly about what opioids are. Okay, right. So your body makes opioids, right? So you have naturally occurring opioids in your body right now.
And as we learned on Tuesday of this week, we said... And your body knows how much to produce.
Right.
Because we use them, we use opioids, our naturally, to manage pain.
Right.
Okay.
When you get hurt, your body releases opioids so that it can numb the pain.
That's right. We call them endogenous opiates because they exist inside us.
Right.
And our body knows when we get injured, it releases some of these endogenous.
Right.
So we have a certain amount.
Right.
And as we said on Tuesday, when you start adding, you begin to affect that process.
Right.
Right.
Now, for some people, as we mentioned, you know, sometimes people are in chronic pain. Sometimes people, biologically, their body is, whether there's a gene or something that sort of predisposes them to not produce as much. And we get these situations where we can see people who have lower or higher pain tolerance.
Right.
And so that has to do, in some part, with the availability of opiates, naturally occurring opiates in the system. And so, again, so when a person is in chronic pain or when they are, their body isn't producing enough opiates, then they do have an increased elevated risk for abusing opiates or looking for that same relief.
Yeah, like everything else in our body, not everybody produces the same amount. Some people have a very high pain tolerance, which means they produce more. Mm-hmm. Some people have less pain tolerance, they produce less.
Right.
So it varies from individual to individual.
Right.
But we all produce endogenous opioids.
Right. Okay. So there are some opioids that are illegal. Heroin is an illegal opiate now. It used to be legal,
but it's most of them are not prescribed.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Some of them are produced and sold
as
legally
medicines.
As medications, but others are not. You know, heroin is not sold anymore as
it
a legal substance. Yes, it used to be, but not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And even ecstasy is in part, MDMA is in part, you know, some opiate-like actions in your body. Many of the rest of the abused opiates are prescription-based opiates.
Right.
Codeine, oxycodone, oxycodone, morphine. A lot of these medications are prescribed, but they're abused.
The only two... If you take the heroin poppy, and you've probably all seen videos about the poppies being sliced and you extract the... what would you call it? The nectar, the liquid from the plant. You can produce morphine and codeine from that plant.
Right.
Okay, that's what that plant will give you.
Right.
If you distill it down, from the plant itself, you get morphine and codeine. Mm-hmm. Everything else is a derivative of those two.
Right.
And that's where we start to create hydrocodone,
right,
better known as Vicodin,
right,
oxycodone,
mm-hmm,
Percocet.
Right.
Okay, so you have Vicodin and Percocet. That's typically what you think of. And then there's another Oxycontin, which is just a slow-release,
right,
form of oxycodone.
Right.
But those are synthesized from either morphine,
right,
or codeine.
Right.
Okay.
And then we have some newer ones like fentanyl,
yeah,
and some of the other ones that are synthetic.
Those are just chemical,
right,
creations in,
right,
a laboratory. They're not derived,
right,
from the plant.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we have these opiates that are available either legally or illegally, and we have this crisis that we're calling it a crisis when it comes,
right,
to opiates because of the use and abuse of these substances. Now, here in Florida, a couple of years ago, there was this massive
scandal.
Yeah, I think that's the best word. About opiates, where they call them
pill mill.
Pill mills. Yeah, I was going to say drug mills, but I was like, that doesn't sound right.
Pill mills.
Where people could go and they could see doctors, and doctors were just sort of giving out these prescriptions,
handing them out,
and just giving them out like Tic Tacs, and
right,
it was a huge problem, and in some areas continues to be a huge problem.
And I think at the time, I don't remember exactly when that was.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think it was in the mid 2000s,
10 years ago.
Yeah,
something like that, because doctors were prescribing them, saying to patients, "Hey, this will take care of your pain.
Mm-hmm.
Your addiction is your problem."
Right.
Okay. And that, I think, was the way that people treated it in those years, is,
mm-hmm,
that I'll treat your pain. Your addiction is a different issue. Nothing to do with me.
Right.
Turned out not to be the case, but
right,
that was the thinking at the time.
And I think that some physicians still maintain that,
right,
perspective, but there's a little bit more regulation and I think what a lot of those people found is that it became increasingly difficult to get the medication.
Right.
And so different places have put different restrictions on it. Some methadone mm-hmm, clinics and everything are designed and set up such that each day the patient would have to go to the clinic to get, mm-hmm, that daily the medication,
right,
for that day,
right,
because they will not give them more than a day's worth of medication at a time,
mm-hmm,
just to keep and prevent the risk or decrease the risk, I suppose,
mm-hmm,
for abuse.
Right. But let's talk about those numbers,
right,
because it's an alarming... These are alarming statistics. I mean, we talk about the,
yeah,
opioid crisis, and we don't have direct comparisons with alcohol or weed or nicotine or the other drugs. But
yeah,
if we just look at the opiates,
yeah,
these are alarming numbers.
Right. Yeah, and I'd like to see some of these numbers, similar numbers, distilled like this from other countries to know. But with what these numbers suggest,
right,
it's clear that it's a massive issue here. The one that you pointed out before we started recording is probably the first one that we should mention, and that is that in 2015,
right,
the Narcotics Control Board reported that 99.7% of the world's hydrocodone consumption was from the United States.
I can't believe that. I was stunned when I saw that.
0.3% of the world's consumption of hydrocodone happened outside of the United States.
Right. Now, that's one drug. That's Vicodin.
Less than half a percent.
We don't know about Percocet. We don't know about fentanyl. We don't know about the others.
Right.
But for this single drug, 99.7% mm-hmm, of it is consumed in the United States.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to explain,
right,
that phenomenon.
Yeah. And it says in 2014, 7.8 billion hydrocodone pills were distributed in the United States. The second one was Percocet, so
mm-hmm,
that's a close second. And in 2014, 4.9 billion oxycodone tablets were distributed in the United States.
How much Vicodin?
So the hydrocodone was 7.8 billion.
7 and 4.
4.9.
Almost 8. About 13 billion.
Mm-hmm. Pills.
We only have 300 million people in this country,
yeah,
and 50 million of them are kids.
Yeah. So it's a tremendous number of pills that are distributed here in the United States.
It's staggering.
And I think that the most concerning is the fact that 99.7% of the world's consumption happened here. What is it about here that makes it to where so many people need these heavy, heavy medications?
Yes, this is a... Because you start... We have two issues here with the opiates. One is...
At least.
That one is that they're used for pain control. That's right. Their only function is pain control. Mm-hmm. They block pain receptors. And for some reason, pain seems to be treated differently in the United States than in other countries. Okay. The second issue is you have the illegal drug trade.
Right.
Okay, so you have the medicinal use of pain relievers, and you have, at the same time, you have illegal drug, because certainly we had a heroin problem long before we had medicinal use of these drugs. I mean, you know, we have opium dens in China, the opium wars in China 100 years ago. And you have the French connection, the use of heroin, just heroin, as a, I don't like to use the term recreational drug. I don't know how to differentiate it from medicinal uses.
Right.
You have medicinal uses.
Illicit use.
And then you have recreational use. Yeah. I mean, you don't need it except that you're addicted to it.
Right.
So you have the illegal use. Now, people are trying to make some connection between the two. That maybe the pharmacy companies are advocating increased use of these drugs, and then people get addicted to them, and then they go on to other things. I'm not sure that's such a large problem.
Right.
But there still is some issue here with the amount of pain relievers prescribed. And it seems to be a U.S. problem.
Right.
Seems to be a problem. When you think of 99.7%, that's virtually all.
Right. Yeah.
That's virtually all all the Vicodin made is used in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what are they? Are they not using it? Do they have anything in other countries? What do they do? What do they do for that kind? And we're not talking about a small amount of hydrocodone. We're talking about billions of pills.
Yeah.
That's millions of prescriptions.
Right. And so it's really critical that we talk about that and talk about the fact that, you know, well, this other article says that it, as you were just saying, it's not just Big Pharma to blame.
No.
Now, they hold some of the blame because
they're one of five factors,
right?
And he refers to it as a perfect storm. He said he said it's not just the pharmacy companies.
Mm-hmm.
He said yes, they're contributing, but there are five issues here that we need to understand of how we got to this problem.
Right? Yeah, because it's, you know, it has become a, as you said a minute ago, we treat pain differently here than they do in other places. We even refer to pain as the fifth vital sign.
You know, I remember...
Which I think is a very interesting.
I remember when... I don't know when I was in the hospital. Nobody asked you about your pain.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went into the hospital recently, and that... I think my wife went into the hospital one time, about 10 or 12 years ago. And they kept talking about... they kept fussing over her pain management.
Mm-hmm.
And there were charts on the hospital room walls about how to describe your pain. I thought this interesting 1 through 10 system, because I thought, is a 3 the same for you as it is for me?
Right.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
But suddenly pain, and I didn't question it at the time. Why now?
Right.
Why not 20 years ago?
Right.
Now I understand why.
Yeah.
Because pain was added as a fifth vital sign.
Right.
Vital signs being?
Blood pressure, heart rate, respiratory rate, and temperature.
Yeah, you always see a physician and a nurse with a stethoscope around there. But why? Because heartbeat is one of the vital signs.
Right.
It's one of, used to be one of 4, now it's one of 5 vital signs.
Right.
So you always check those 4. Well, then they added pain.
Right. It's just so interesting because pain is just so subjective.
Right. And it's not only subjective, it's also... because it's been made one of the 5 vital signs, it's become very important.
Right.
It's taken on a whole new importance that it never had before.
Yeah, yeah. But as we said before, being the fifth vital sign is really only one of the other causes or other contributing factors to these opioid crisis. The other one is insurance companies.
Right.
You know, we talk a lot about insurance companies, but it's, or, you know, insurance companies are often mentioned in the news, especially now with, with the discussions still about Obamacare and everything. But insurance companies play a heavy role when it comes to treatment.
That's right. Insurance companies and managed care, when those two combined also have contributed to this crisis.
Right.
Because they demand that physicians do their work in a certain way.
Right.
And so this, the ease of pain management today with these drugs makes it possible just to write these prescriptions and you get reimbursed for it.
Right.
I mean, you get reimbursed for the visit because, as you said, people have to come to the office to get a prescription. These are not medications that you phone in.
Right.
So you have to go to the office.
Right.
And that's how you get reimbursed for the office visit.
So when you talk about managed care, we're talking about sort of another factor, and that is the business of medicine itself. When a person is getting pain medication, they have to go to this office for a prescription. The physician can't just call the pharmacy to call it in. They have to be there. And so that's additional billing, that's additional revenue that the office. And again, it's not being critical to physicians. It's just this is not the nature of the business of medicine.
Now. One of the and they refer to it as the medication has become an assembly line.
Right.
Dr. Simon refers to it as an assembly line, and a colleague of his refers to it as the Toyotization of medicine, because we have created in the name of efficiency and to hold down healthcare costs, we have turned medicine into an assembly line production where everything is tracked and counted. And so you get reimbursed for the number of patients you see. So once you incentivize numbers like that, then that's how the system is going to work. So it's not that the physicians are being dishonest. It's that the system has been set up in a certain way, and that's how it functions.
Now, I think another factor that contributes to this opioid crisis, I think that it falls back to the patient as well. You know, the unfortunate truth is that I've certainly heard many physicians talk to patients about, well, you know, if you would just do this, or if you'd make this change, or if you would, you know, lose this weight, or if you would, you know, change this about your diet, or these habits, or those habits, you'll see a significant decrease in pain and discomfort. And patients just simply won't do that.
I remember probably 30 or more years ago, a friend of ours had started to gain weight. He gained it in his stomach, and it was changing his posture. And he started to develop back problems. And the physician said, you need to lose that gut because it's throwing off your spine, and that's what's causing your back problems.
Right.
How many people are willing to do that today?
Right.
No, let me keep my eating habits. Just give me some Vicodin or
Just give me some pain relief. You know,
relieve the pain in my back. Don't ask me to do anything else. It's too hard. It's too time. But that's not how medication is practiced. Not how medicine is practiced today.
So some part of it does fall back to the patient as well.
It does. You know, there are things that you can do. Exercise, as you said, exercise, physical therapy, diet, nutrition.
Right. And how many times have you talked to people who say, oh, no, you need to go see this guy because he will give you what you're looking for? You know? And again, not because the physician is you know, malicious or bad or anything like that. It's just that some physicians, you know, they treat and they respond to patient complaints about pain in different ways.
But I think the point to be made here is it's not just Big Pharma. You know, Big Pharma takes the... We're not absolving anybody. We're not blaming anybody.
Right.
We're just saying, as Dr. Simon says in this article, it's a much more complicated problem.
Right.
It's a five-part perfect storm.
Right.
And you have to understand all five pieces in order to appreciate the problem.
Absolutely.
But yes, it is contributing, because what happens is people get put on these painkillers during surgery, and they can get addicted. If you get addicted to the
physiological
opioid, you can't afford to buy them on the street.
Right.
So heroin is cheaper.
Right.
And then heroin is cut with fentanyl, which makes it more potent.
Yeah.
However, we have to remember the earlier article that said, or that yesterday's podcast that said, not everybody who gets addicted, if you change...
If you change the environment a little bit, you change
the addiction. So again, there's not a one-to-one correspondence that everybody who takes these drugs. I had surgery last summer, and I was on, I think one of the OxyContin. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember which one.
Oxycodone or OxyContin. Never got. I didn't miss it when I stopped taking it. I got tired of taking it because it makes you kind of drowsy. Mm-hmm. But didn't miss it when I stopped taking it. Yeah. So not everybody who takes them gets addicted. Yeah. So there isn't a one-to-one correspondence.
Yeah, there's absolutely certainly some other...
Other factors,
and that's what we talked about over the last couple of days. So.
Right.
So, all right.
It's a complicated problem. This whole thing about addiction, even the opioid crisis, they're complicated, multifaceted problems,
right.
And we need to investigate and understand the complexity.
Yeah.
It's not a simple thing.
Absolutely. So, tomorrow we're going to wrap up this week talking a little bit about treatment. And so, we will be back then to talk about that. Then and that. So until then, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.